Hi, I'm Ken.
And I'm Dee.
And this is Antiques Freaks.
The podcast. You know the one.
Antiques.
And freaks.
What antiques are we talking about this week?
We are gonna talk about probably the most exciting thing of all time. Cast iron doorstops.
Sorry. Cast iron doorstops?
Cast iron doorstops.
Alright. Lay it on me.
So, you know what your first question is? And I know you're wondering this. What is a doorstop?
Does it stop a door?
No.
Oh.
Nothing stops a door. Yeah, it does. according to Wikipedia, perennially my best friend, an object or device used to hold a door open or closed, or to prevent a door from opening or closing too widely.
So that's Wiki speak for it stops a door.
Stops a door, yeah. You put it in the door and then the door can't move past it. It also described it as a decorative and invariably heavy object.
Invariably
heavy. Which, like, yeah, I guess, has to stop a door. So, doorstops can actually be traced to about 1775.
The invention of the door?
No, the invention of the rising butt hinge.
The rising butt hinge?
The rising butt hinge.
You're making this up.
I'm not making it up at all. Absolutely not. No, 1775, the rising butt hinge was invented.
By Benjamin Franklin?
No, by John Buttman.
By John Buttman. Okay.
I don't know who did it.
John Buttram. Got it.
This isn't an episode about the rising butt hinge.
That's next week.
This was it was an automatic door. It was like a precursor to like pneumatic door systems. It was like a spring.
Oh, that made it shut close. Wait, nope. That made it close slowly?
Well, this made it close very fast, necessitating the doorstop.
Oh, wait. So, we were like, this door takes too long to close. I want it to spring shut.
Well, it was more like, my blasted freaking kids never shut the door. I need to make sure the door shuts itself. But then it was biting fingers.
Then the door became hungry.
Yeah, but then, like, their hands over their face, they were like, oh my god, there are times when I need the door to not be shut. What have I done? Curse you, rising butt.
Oh, no.
So, doorstops, for a very long time, were usually just chunks of stuff. Very popular were lead bricks. One website that I visited very helpfully added, as the toxic nature of lead became known, they became less popular, which I like because it means there were some holdouts.
Nothing stops my door quite like lead. I'm not willing to give it up.
Not changing it. So usually it was just lumps of stuff.
Like a copy of Les Miserables by Victor Hugo?
Yeah. Yeah, like, or brick.
It's a joke for you.
Or the brick, you know.
Hashtag Brick Club.
As for the formal invention of the doorstop we know, the doorstop you're thinking of, as opposed to just a piece of stuff you put in front of your door.
My best friend, the doorstop.
An incredibly mysterious man that I sadly can't tell you an awful lot about, named Osborne Dorsey.
Is that the Scarlet Pimpernel?
No, it's not the Scarlet Pimpernel. A whole new layer of mystery. All we know about him is that he was an African-American inventor. Unclear if he was a freed slave or born to freed parents. In 1878, who had what he called the doorstopper patented in 1878. It has a patent number of 210,764. Past that, no one knows anything about him.
He sure did patent this and then vanished into the night.
Pretty much.
To become Zorro.
No, he also patented some doorknobs. He was a very door-oriented man.
Interesting. How very fey of him.
What?
He is Artigan.
Oh, Lord Almighty. Anyway. Yeah, do you think he actually just, like, stepped into the fairy circle and disappeared?
Listen, the fae love liminal spaces. There is no space more liminal than a door.
I categorically, you're not wrong, yeah.
I'm just saying, now we have scientific proof of fairies. Call Sir Arthur Conan Doyle.
Osborne Dorsey's gonna, like, he's gonna, like, get you. Because he's the fairy king. My list of early doorstops just says bricks, lead, and other bricks. Most commonly made from metal because it's heavy. That's surreal. Thank you again, Wikipedia, for the nugget.
What would we do without them?
So, the earliest doorstops formally were round and vaguely decorative.
Vaguely.
In that they were a shape other than a brick.
Wait, sorry, round?
Round, yeah.
Do they not then roll away from the door?
Well, they had a foot.
So they're like a snail.
What?
It's round, it has a foot. snails.
Are you okay?
Snail shells? Look, what shape are snails? They are round. They have round, curly shells, yes?
Yes.
And most of their body is the foot. They are round things with feet. Are these doorstops shaped like snails?
Not really.
Okay.
Okay. All right. They were flat-backed, unlike snail. Hollow, unlike a snail. And were generally sand-cast.
Just like a snail.
Just like a snail. God, sand-casted every one of those little buggers. No, sand-casting is actually a really fascinating process from a time before mold-making. What you do is you get really fine, really densely packed sand, usually like kind of wet, and you would carve the form you wanted out. You'd either carve it out of wood or hammer it out of metal. Wood was more common because you get more detail. And then you would press it carefully into the really densely packed sand, and then fill that with molten metal.
Could they pour it directly on top of the wood and have the wood just, like, evaporate from the heat of the metal? Or does that not work the way I hope it will?
It doesn't work the way you hope it will.
Well, shoot.
Well, it tends to adhere to the wood. Whereas the sand will form, like, a single layer that can be sanded off.
Oh, sand off the sand. Yeah. Use sand to fight sand.
Perfect. Can't fail. Anyway, that's just a cool thing about sand casting that I know. So, yeah. The end. No. Around 1820, cast iron became the more popular metal for making doorstops. Again, earlier we were talking about brass and pig metal. I think they call it spelter. Anyway.
Helter spelter kill the pigs?
I swear to God. Charles Manson invented the doorstop.
This explains so much.
Yeah, like why the doorstops keep killing people. What? Someone took their silly pills today.
Are you telling me that a large, metal, heavy object in the home is not a perfect murder weapon?
No, I'm sure plenty of people died.
I was gonna say, because, like, if Clue taught me anything...
Well, Clue taught you that it could be anything.
It's mostly bludgeoning stuff.
Mostly lead pipes, yeah.
Yeah, it's like lead pipe, candlestick, like, it's primarily bludgeoning instruments, but anyway.
So cast iron became more popular. Because it was cheaper and easier to use.
And less poisonous than lead.
This also came along with them becoming more decorative. At this point, actually, they started installing handles, so you could move them around easier, and they were called door porters, which is just a cute thing.
They were called door-doorers?
Yeah. Door-doors.
Double doors.
Double door. Speaking of double doors, lots of door stops. I forgot, like, I said door so many times that it lost its meaning and I paused and I was like, door, door. lots of door stops came in matched or complementary pairs for double doors.
Ooh.
One famous example is a pair with Punch and Judy.
Ha.
So they could be tacky as well. As we all know, Victorian decorations trend towards the tacky.
Oh, you.
These hit it off in America around the 1920s. Absolutely the most popular period of time for cast iron doorstops. No reason given. Absolutely, there's no anthropological basis I can find for why 1920 was when everyone was like, gotta have my doorstop.
So there was like a 100-year sleeping period?
Well, there was 100 years where it was just like a thing you used. But in 1920 is when you get this huge boom of the decorative patterns and designs.
Oh, this is when we're like, wait, we can make this nice to look at instead of bad.
Yeah. This is when they turn into, like, pogs. God, no one knows what I just said. Even people who grew up during that time period were like, what are you talking about? I had friends. Unsurprisingly, the fervor for cast iron door stops died down during World War II. Thanks to, what else? Metal rationing.
Turns out we needed that metal for useful shit.
Yeah, other than making our door look pretty. Like I said, most cast iron doorstops you'll find are actually going to be somewhere between turn of the century and 1940.
Okay.
Like, the huge bulk of doorstop making. Obviously, things older than this are more valuable. We'll get to that. President Andrew Jackson famously, I don't know if that, like, that seems like an exaggeration already, given that we're talking about doorstops. He had a doorstop of a frog with the slogan, "I croak for the Jackson wagon," that he used during his campaign. Which brings up a number of questions. He had a traveling doorstop for his campaign?
No, I think the slogan was what he used during his campaign.
Okay, that brings me to my second question. What is that slogan?
Andrew Jackson?
I croak for the Jackson wagon?
I mean, I think he was just, like, too high on murder to, like, slogan.
Yeah, he was, like, fucking blood drunk. He was just like, even the frog will die for me. Like,
yeah.
Did croconaut mean die at that point?
No, it did.
So it was just like, the frog was like, I would die for Andrew Jackson.
Yeah.
And everyone was like, why is it a frog?
And he was like, because frogs croak. Do you get it? Anyway, I have more people to murder. Bye.
It's like a lot of, it's a lot to take in.
Do you remember that, like, off Broadway Andrew Jackson rock opera?
No, of course I don't.
I made you listen to it.
What are you talking about?
It's real. It exists. Go look it up on
What's
YouTube.
What's it called?
Andrew Jackson.
Well, no wonder I don't remember.
What's a big Broadway, like, rap musical about Alexander Hamilton called?
I think it's called, it's probably called George Washington and the Funky Bunch.
No, you think of 1776.
Musicals are trash. I'm sorry, I don't mean that.
Musical theater was a mistake.
I don't mean that, I'm sorry.
I'm excited for the new Cats with Ian McKellen.
I think we all are. So many goddamn doorsteps. Holy shit. Like, not just questionably violent frog president campaign once. You could buy figurals, baskets, flowers, fruit. Animals, gnomes, wildlife, houses, vehicles, places, specific people, objects, which is ironic, the circus, golf, nurseries, little children, adults, pictures of trains, everything. If you could think of it, there's probably a doorstop of it.
I do really want, like, a little cast iron train doorstop.
Those are actually very popular.
That sounds so cute.
Unpleasantly, I did find one of a little girl holding ribbons that says, tie me. And I know the past was different, but, like, I'm gonna need everyone in 1920 to, like, chill for a minute.
What?
Yeah.
Okay. Sure.
So there's just, like, basically, for the entire period of time that doorstops became a decorative item, If it was popular at any point in history, there was a doorstop of it. So there are some, like, weird fly-by-night singers that have doorstops of them. Like, this is, like, if this was happening in the 1990s, we would have NSYNC and Backstreet Boy doorstops.
Hell yeah.
And, like, Fortnite, and Avocado Toast, and, like, Skip It's, Tamagotchis. I don't remember my own childhood.
Pogs.
It all came back around. I did that on purpose. So, I mean, that's just kind of the long and short of their history. Now that I've talked about this, I bet you're thinking, I want one.
I need a train doorstop to stop my door.
So many goddamn designs exist that it is most people design their collections around a theme.
Trains.
For you, it'll be trains. That is not an impossibility.
Yay!
Like most antiques, especially home antiques for everyday use, condition is everything. They are very rarely in good condition.
On account of them being on the floor and serving a practical use?
Well, on account of their entire use being getting hit by a door. They are actually uniquely one of, like, it is actually pretty weird if you didn't break it.
Cast iron, though.
Well, that's why it was popular. Like I said, breakage is something to consider. Paint condition. The more intact the original paint, the better. And the less original the paint, the worse. Actually, there are three major value designations for colors on a cast iron doorstop.
Oh, wait, they were painted?
Yeah.
Oh, I missed that part.
So most of them, actually, a very fun thing is turn of the century roundabouts. A lot of them were sold as paint-it-yourself kits. So they would come with these enamel paints and the homeowners themselves would paint it.
Crafting!
Which makes those very valuable because obviously they're one of a kind.
Hand-painted.
They're hand-painted and they represent a really unique thing.
Outsider art.
Some of the newer ones, getting closer to the 1940s, were electroplated in, like, a single shade. And some of them are just blank. Those are just ones that got the paint ruined off of them.
A blank slate for me to project my dreams onto.
Yes, yeah, for you to paint. Don't do that. It'll ruin the value.
No.
And that's in order, descending order of value there. Is a hand-painted one most valuable, blank one least valuable. Electroplated ones, eh. Nothing to write home about. Some of the most popular and desirable manufacturers you'd be looking for. Hubley. This is a huge one. Hubley was very well known for their metal toys. But they didn't stop just there.
Hubley?
Hubley.
Okay.
Well, we might actually have to do an episode about Hubley.
I think we do.
Because they were a big entity.
If only to make fun of their name for an hour.
Well, it was a toy company.
I know, but
it had a silly name on purpose.
It's funny.
Albany, Wilton, National, Spencer, Bradley, and Hubbard.
Spencer of the Gifts?
No.
Oh.
Yeah, well, imagine if Spencer Gifts just started by making, like, naughty cast iron doorstops.
I mean, I would not be surprised.
Of, like, a lady's boobs. Or, like, a butt. And, like, and it's saying, like, an obscene thing, like, kiss this.
Like, you say these things, but I'm half convinced that is their origin story.
I bet if we showed up, they'd have that right there. Some of the more unusual items are anything human, like human figural. Those actually tend to be a little rarer and more sought after. Sport-themed ones.
Sports ball.
Transportation that isn't boats, so trains.
Trains.
Yeah. Got it. And unusual sizes, really long ones. Very famously, Hubley had a covered wagon-themed one that was 17 inches long.
Like a whole wagon train?
Yeah. And it was big, big long.
Big long.
Given that these were usually less than a foot long. Some of the more popular and more common ones are things like boats, flowers, and animals. And houses, up to a certain point. Although, in my experience, the houses are more of a novelty than a lot of, like, people will tell you.
I've never really felt that there's much novel about a small figure of a house.
That's very rude. I want you to apologize to Cast Iron Doorstops right now.
I'm sorry, Cast Iron Doorstops.
There was one that was, like, a figure of, like, Shakespeare's house.
Oh,
it's, like,
okay.
Very, like, desirable these days.
Specific houses, okay.
Usually with specific houses, yeah. Like, landmark houses. Other things to look out for. Unusual details. There are some animal ones that have glass eyes. Obviously, the survival of the glass eyes is very rare.
Replaced with googly eyes?
God, I wish. I'd be so delighted if I found a door, like a dog doorstop, and it just had big, rattly, googly eyes. And specific portraitures of humans. Any weird size, basically, if it breaks the sand mold in any way. I'm very pleased with myself for that. Rare animals, I believe very famously a peacock doorstop went for something like $4,000.
Peacocks is fancy.
Peacocks are fancy, and they weren't normally molded. On the other hand, dogs and cats, very common.
So cute, though.
In fact, I believe Hubley, it wasn't just Hubley. On the market at any given time, there were at least 35 different molds of a Boston Terrier.
Listen, we love our terriers.
Everyone loves a terrier. I did find this fun tidbit from antiques appraiser Dr. Lori of Beanie Baby fame. She says, on collecting cast iron doorstops, this is my favorite thing anyone said ever in, like, the history of the industry. Don't be enticed by a cast iron object that looks like a doorstop or could be used as a doorstop when it is not a doorstop.
Ceci n'est pas un doorstop?
Wise words. Wise words. I think there's something in that we could all learn to live by.
True.
Just because it could be a doorstop doesn't mean that it's a doorstop.
I feel like it really says a lot about the human condition.
It's like, wow, you know?
Yeah.
It's like, I felt that.
In that moment, I swear we were infinite.
In that moment, I swear I was a doorstop. But I wasn't a doorstop.
What?
And you shouldn't purchase me.
You lied to me.
Because I could, I look like a doorstop.
I'm leaving, I'm taking the kids.
I could theoretically stop a door. But I am not a cast iron doorstop. And as such, you're just gonna have to leave me behind. Anyway. The bulk of why I want to talk about cast iron doorstops, how many times can I say that in a single episode, do you think?
Not enough.
Cast iron doorstops. They are, as with most items that started their life as bolts, heavily reproduced.
You don't say.
Just so much. Some of them are formal reproductions by cast iron companies. Some of them are actually the original molds. That doesn't stop them from being a reproduction. Just because it's a more ethical reproduction doesn't mean it's not a reproduction, and it still affects your bottom line and the heart of your collection. Unless you don't care, in which case, I guess, why are you here?
Trains. I'm here for the trains.
You're here for the trains. He's here for the trains, everybody. What's that? Chugga 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 chugga. Choo choo.
At last.
Do you want to learn how to identify a repro?
Hell yeah.
So when you find the train, you'll know?
Yeah.
There are actually a lot of giveaways for these. This is one of the easier antiques to identify. Biggest one. Phillip head screws. Should not be there. A Phillip head screw will always give away a reproduction.
How about a square head?
You mean like a nail?
No, you've never seen a square head screw?
I probably have, but just haven't heard it referred to like that.
Oh, this is supposed to be an offhand joke about how those are even more recently invented than Phillips head, but you know.
Oh, are they?
Yeah.
I don't know. More age-appropriate screws would be a slotted screw, a flat with a single slot.
Like a cartoon screw.
Like a cartoon screw. Or a smooth rivet that was hammered in. Remember, Phillips head screws are an immediate dead giveaway. Other one is the paint quality. If it is too new, shiny, and undamaged, that's pretty fucking suspicious. It's especially the shininess is a give, like, because there are cast iron doorstops that have their intact paint. The Peacock one I mentioned earlier actually did have the distinction. It is a matte flat paint. It doesn't have the glossy coating that the paint you would use now has. Also, look at the texture. The texture should be very smooth. Very smooth. Especially considering how old these things are, they tend to be a little bit worn. Whereas the newer ones are mass-produced, they don't have the time taken to be smoothed out. A lot of them have the sand grit in them. It's not removed before they paint it. So if you pet one and you can feel the sand grit, that's actually pretty much a giveaway that it's new.
Pet the train.
So pet that train. How's it feel? Smooth? You're good to go. In general, just roughness. You're looking at seams are a big one. Any, like, cutaway where there'd be, like, a detail in an original would be very carefully filed and sanded. With the repros, almost never the case, really. They tend to be sharp, they tend to have protrusions, and they tend to have, the thin connecting film in small open details. The sizes are frequently wrong. This requires a little more digging, but doorstops are very common and popular collectible, so you get to know the size that it's supposed to be at, and it'll either be bigger or smaller because of the way the materials work, basically. It should be a standard size. If it's not, keep an eye on it. You want to look for blurred or dull details. Ideally, it should be a very sharp and clear detail, but when you use a mold over and over again into infinity, they tend to lose a lot of their sparkle. So a lot of reproductions just don't have the clarity. You also want to look at the seams. Originals have very fine, very sanded seams that are no greater than 1/16th of an inch gap. And they tend to be flush. So if the seam is rounded, sharp, or there's a noticeable gap, that's suspicious. You also just kind of want to look at what is the pattern. For example, Boston Terrier, I'd be very suspicious. It is one of the most commonly reproduced alongside that one basket of flowers. You know the one. You want to look for Maker's Bark. They don't bother to reproduce those for some reason. In Hubley specifically, you're looking for Hubley stamp and a 4-digit number, referring to the mold number. And that's about it. Other than that, it's a lot of common sense stuff like logical wear patterns. Sometimes they will literally take the repros and hit them with a hammer to make them look used, but they don't think about where they're hitting it. So you're looking at ears, noses, and the part of it that the door hit. That's another big thing is uneven wear. When they hit it with hammers, they tend to just hit the front. They never think to age the back. And since it's got a hollow, concave back, you can take a look and it'll be shiny new despite the front of it being rusted. And there you go. Like I said, there's a lot of tells. It's a lot less intimidating than other kinds of reproduction spotting. And maybe you're into it. I don't know. It could be very lucrative if you find one. Median price is about $50. It goes up pretty fast from there.
Damn.
Yeah. And 50 is considered cheap for these. So yeah. If you want to know more, if you want just a weirdly exhaustive listing of every pattern and maker, The Doorstop Book, an encyclopedia of doorstop collecting by John and Nancy Smith. Yes, you heard that right. His name is John Smith.
The real question is, could you use the book itself as a doorstop?
No, it's pretty small, actually.
Really?
Not much to say on the subject, sadly.
Is that irony? I don't know what irony is
anymore.
No,
it's cast irony. Holy shit.
We do have fun.
Oh, goodness. So that's doorstops.
That's doorstops.
Today's sources include antiqueshoppefl.com, the article Doorstops. I wish I were kidding about this. Doorstops.com. Which has a delightfully well-detailed list of different patterns and images on doorstops. Very fun to go through. They certainly know what they're talking about. Doorstops.com. Man, sometimes domains are just exactly what they say on the tin. Foter.com, that's F-O-T-E-R, /hubbly doorstops. NewEngland.com, Yankee Magazine, article, Antiques and Collectibles, doorstops. DrLoriV.com, her article on cast iron doorstops. And DigAntiques.com, July 2013 newsletter. So thank you to all of the sources for helping me out and putting this together in a cool way.
And Wikipedia?
And Wikipedia for telling me what a doorstop even was.
What would we do without them?
I would struggle to understand.
If you would like to talk more about doorstops or other antiques, or just want to say hey, you can email us directly at antiquesfreakspodcast@gmail.com. Or you can hit up our Facebook at facebook.com/antiquesfreaks and join our Facebook group, Antiques Freaks Friends.
And post some fun memes.
Memes. Feed the memes. We also have an Etsy shop at etsy.com/shop/antiquesfreaks, where we have a variety of vintage goods, plus stickers and t-shirts.
Books coming soon. I started photographing them. Give me another week.
Another week to catalog and post all of the books that Dee has acquired at all of the antique sales.
Oh no, I'm only doing like 5 at a time.
Oh yeah?
It's just that there's more info to convey.
Oh no.
I can't, if I were going to post them all at once, I'm pretty sure...
We'd be a library?
I'm pretty sure, yeah. The federal government would be like, you're a store now. Like a real one. You're a library. Dewey Decimal. And then I'd start screaming.
If you would like to listen to deleted scenes or join our random vintage postcard of the month club, you can check out our Patreon at patreon.com/antiquesfreaks. Thank you to all of our current patrons for supporting the podcast, helping us pay our hosting fees and get closer to a second microphone and releasing bonus episodes.
We love you.
We love you very much. And thank you for listening.
That's right, you.
You especially. Bye.